I'm speaking with Ray Ramsey. He's a naval architect. He was one of 12 naval architects that worked on the building of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Did you have any problems with what the design team was trying to do?
When I first went there, I said, "Where are the welding symbols on the drawings?" And the answer I got was, "We've been building ships for 100 years. We don't need any welding symbols. The guys know what they're doing." And my boss said, "Knock it off, Ray." I said, "Why?" I said, "This is part of good naval architecture." "And hold your hat," he said, "the Coast Guard has no specifications in their load lines for load line criteria. So if they don't want it, the owner doesn't want to pay for it. And if we do it, it will come out of our pocket. So knock it off." Well, I continued. And I was told in no uncertain terms, "Knock it off, else I'll put the skids under you." Now, I was just married. I just had a new mortgage. And, you know, that situation puts you in. So I left it alone, but I kept the data. And what I did, I took that data for how the ship could be loaded in various ways. I took the best condition in still water after it was launched. And I took a transit or a theodoline. And with an assistant, I sighted the curvature of the hull. In other words, bent upwards or bent downwards, hogging or sagging, as we call it. And I got approximately 8.5 inches hogging with no cargo, brand new ship, in still water. Now, when I went on the trial trip approximately a year later on Lake Erie, there was not a heavy sea running, but I did go down both of the tunnels, port and starboard, which were lighted, and that ship was not just deflecting up and down, it was doing it laterally and also rotationally. And to use a naval architect's term, it's a very limber ship, which can lead to fatigue.
This ship was owned by the Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company, and they were going to use this ship for investment purposes.
Absolutely. When it came to the Fitzgerald, they leased it, and perhaps maintenance was neglected. Now, you asked me, did I have any problems? Well, yes, I did, because when the Coast Guard regulations barely got to 500 feet, there was no R&D done on structures, determine what structure should be to go to the other 100 plus feet. Now, before the Fitzgerald, the longest ship was about 500 feet. In this particular case, couldn't change the beam because that's what the lock system restrained you to. You couldn't change the depth of the ship for the same reason. Now, you have to extrapolate from what you already know. And without the R&D, many times it's a wild guess. And to my naval architect mind, she was under-designed from the day go.
And this was a double-hull ship?
Yes, all the ore carriers are. The inner hull is the one that provides the boundaries for the carrying the cargo. In the case of the Fitzgerald, there were 3 cargo holds, a total of 21 cargo hatches, which were up on the upper deck to, or spar deck as they call it, to allow the loading. Now, those were tremendous holes in the deck. Each of those hatches was about 60% the width of the deck. And then going fore and aft on each of the 21 hatches, it was about 11 feet.
Now, there were a lot of hatches.
Yes, it's virtually a perforated deck.
How do they lift the hatches?
It's an electric crane.
Were the hatches watertight?
I've got to be careful of that word. When you're watertight, it's like on a submarine where you can submerge and it won't leak.
Yes.
Weathertight is the correct word for the Fitzgerald and other Lakers, which is spray tight. And they test it with a 4-foot head of water over a tremendous flex area. Now, I'd like you to visualize that big hatch I told you about, 11 feet fore and aft. It was only 5/16 inch thick. when you go into heavy weather, you get a lot more than 4 feet of water on those hatches. And in the particular case of Fitzgerald, when she ran into that thing called Gitche-Gumee, where you've got a combination of the Seiche running from north to south and fluctuating back and forth, and you've got the surge, it has nowhere to go.
Now, did you say Gitche-Gumee?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It's an Indian name that was given to the, specifically Lake Superior, because it was a kind of the graveyard of ships. The Gitche-Gumee, if I read the history, they say about 6,000 ships have been lost on the Great Lakes. And though most of those have died on the Lake Superior during the month of November. Now, back in those days, even when they got up to 500-foot ships, there was no global positioning system to know exactly where you were. Weather forecast was very, very primitive. And when I checked the design, there was very little data available on the wave characteristics.
But the Edmund Fitzgerald was the biggest ship on the Great Lakes during its time. Did you think it was unsinkable, like other people?
No, I did not. The freeboard was not to be sneezed at. It was pretty deeply loaded. And the waves could break over there. And in the case of the heavy storm it went into, it's my theory that the waves did go on that deck. And you could easily, with a following sea, and a wave which could go as high as 80 to 100 feet, you lose one hatch cover to one cargo hold, could sink the ship, I estimated, in 14 seconds.
And yet they said the cause of the sinking was unknown.
Well, because there were no witnesses, there were no distress signals. But when you look at the genesis of this ship, it started off with guessing what the structure should be, and then a few years after it went into service, the Coast Guard revised the load line regulations to let the ship load about 3 feet deeper, carry more cargo. And now you translate that in tons per inch immersion with the allowance the Coast Guard gave, and she was carrying about 4,000 more tons than she was ever designed to do, and in my view, a weak design to start with.
And it's a different load-carrying capacity if the ship was on salt water versus fresh water.
Yes, I'm glad you picked up on that, because when you look at the mid-1930s, that was the beginning of the time when they decided there should be some regulation on the Great Lakes with all the losses they had. A commission was set up in the mid-1930s, and they basically were ocean-going people who came and took a look at the lakes for the first time, thinking, to put in quotation, it's just a lake, it's not an ocean.
I'm speaking with Ray Ramsey. He's a naval architect. He was one of 12 naval architects that worked on the building of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Since this ship was built for investment purposes, and is it possible that it was carrying something other than iron ore? I mean, I heard rumors that it was carrying something that pertained to national security.
I used to work for the Navy Department, and there are things I can't talk about. But when you are in a Cold War mode, you may carry anything the DOD tells you to. But if they wanted to carry, shall we say, a nuclear warhead or something that's too sensitive to put over a roadway or on an airplane, the lakes would be a pretty good transit path. So with certain security, you could carry something not in the books.
When the Edmund Fitzgerald went down or went missing, was the Navy involved or other military craft involved in a search other than the Coast Guard?
Let me say this. When DOD and its family get involved, you rarely find out what's going on.
Did the Department of Defense get involved?
They could. It is a good vehicle if you've got one-third of the cargo space not being used.